Welcome back to HealthCetera. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of HealthCetera that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy. And now let's turn our attention to how we talk about end-of-life choices. On HealthCetera, we cover end-of-life issues a lot because we believe it's an important topic that has suffered from a lack of public discussion. And let's face it, people don't like to think about dying, let alone talk about it. But we know that making informed choices about how you live and die can make all the difference in having a horrific or a comfortable experience during our last transition in this life. Now, a recent study found that even the language that health professionals use to talk with people about end-of-life choices can make a difference in those choices and in their comfort level with their choices. I'm pleased to have with us the author of this study, Dr. Don Fairley, a registered nurse and professor of nursing at the College of Staten Island. Don, thank you so much for being with us on HealthCetera today.
Thank you, Diana. I'm happy to be here.
So tell me why you decided to do this study.
Oh, that goes way back. I was raised during a time when people weren't allowed to decide not to be resuscitated, so my family discussed their preferences around the kitchen table. Then I segued into nursing, and my first patient was an elderly gentleman who was tethered to a bed on a bird respirator with no choice. And it left a lasting impression on me.
And when you say about do not resuscitate, what is do not resuscitate? We also refer to it as a DNR.
Do not resuscitate means that we will not call a code or perform CPR when a person's heart or breathing stops.
So why would you not do that?
Well, if the person does not have a good chance of survival or survival with a quality of life afterwards, maybe that individual doesn't want to have CPR performed on them because of the frequency of fractured ribs and futility.
And CPR being cardiopulmonary resuscitation.
Yes.
Now, if there's not a do not resuscitate order and a person arrests, their heart stops or their breathing stops when they're in a healthcare facility,
mm-hmm.
The healthcare professionals are bound by law to resuscitate that person. Is that correct?
That's correct. The default is to resuscitate.
Yeah. So even if somebody has metastatic cancer, they are wasting away, they are having a horrific experience at this point, if their heart stops, they must be resuscitated. If they do not have an order saying do not resuscitate.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why is it so difficult to get people to talk about do not resuscitate and having an order for do not resuscitate?
Well, end-of-life decisions are complex and individualized based on particular circumstances. And as a healthcare provider, there's no script to have these difficult conversations. So it's important for us to become increasingly educated on the research-based nuances, as well as to encourage families to talk. It's an emotionally laden decision. It's usually made under circumstances of extreme distress. And even when people do have this decision, they don't necessarily express their wishes clearly or know the specifics of what they're actually signing or not signing.
Mm. So tell us about your study and what your study looked at. You looked at some language difference.
Yeah, I looked at language differences between do not resuscitate, known as a DNR, and an increasingly used terminology, allow natural death, which is known as an AND. And I compared them for decisional conflict in older adults in New Jersey.
And so tell us a little bit about what you had people do.
Well, the participants were randomized into two groups, and they received a survey packet that had one of two sets of words, do not resuscitate or allow natural death. They were given the survey packets. They personalized the survey packets with the name of a loved one. Then they read a patient decision aid, which describes the process of CPR and the survival rates and the complications. And then they were given a vignette that they personalized with the name of that loved one, read the vignette, and then were asked, will they sign the document, either an AND or a DNR, and the decisional conflict scale was administered.
So the vignette presented what?
A scenario where they've just been approached by the physician and told that their loved one had only a few weeks to live, and would they sign the CPR?
So either a DNR or allow a natural death.
In the decision aid, it asks about it calls it an allow natural death or a DNR, but in the vignette itself, it just described the CPR.
Yeah. And what did you find?
Well, I found the participants were 8 times more likely to sign the document when it was an AND document than a DNR document. Yeah, an allow natural death document than a DNR document, which indicated that the actual message framing influences surrogate decision makers when they're making end-of-life decisions. And this is consistent with other findings in the past. There were several other findings that I had, and they were that end-of-life decision making, the DNR respondents, the do not resuscitate respondents, reported more uncertainty with their decision, and that led to a decreased likelihood of actually making the decision and increased decision regret. There was also a greater number of respondents to the do not resuscitate version that were likely not to sign or postpone signing, which would also lead to prolongation of dying of their loved ones.
So why do you think this language, DNR do not resuscitate versus AND allow a natural death, why do you think it makes so much difference in terms of people's decisions, as well as you looked at comfort level with decision?
Well, studies in the past have compared the terminologies, and I think that my study substantiated the previous studies. And is generally viewed as a kinder and gentler way to indicate that our focus with the patient is now moving towards creating a comfortable dying experience, whereas do not resuscitate language is often interpreted as withholding of care and creates guilt.
I think even when there is support from healthcare professionals to sign a do not resuscitate order, that pressure on people to think, oh, I'm not going to be supportive of my loved one, I'm not going to resuscitate, versus allow a natural death suggests, okay, we're going to do this peacefully, we're going to do this with comfort, and it doesn't mean that care is being withheld, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I have to say that during the process of doing this research, my mother had a hemorrhagic stroke, and I received the phone call to sign a do not resuscitate order for her, and I really toiled with it. I toiled with it and toiled with it, even though we had had the whole discussion, and then I tapped myself on the side of the head and said, wait a minute, we're allowing a natural death here, and that changed my whole perspective.
Wow.
Yeah. It was dramatic.
Yeah. If that's the process that you experienced, then for a layperson, no wonder that so few people sign DNR orders.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that hospitals and other healthcare facilities are starting to shift their language. Are there any legal requirements that they specify DNR versus allow a natural death?
No legal requirements. The places where you do see it the most, the AND terminology, are in hospices and palliative care. And additionally, the POLST or the MOLST form, depending on which state you're in, does list both terminologies at the top of the page in some states.
Say what POLST and MOLST is.
Okay, I will. Physicians.
Orders for life.
Yes. Yes, physician's orders for life-sustaining treatment or medical orders for life-sustaining treatment.
And what are they?
Well, they are, do you want to be resuscitated with chest compressions? Do you want to be intubated, have a breathing tube inserted down your throat? Do you want to have a feeding tube inserted? Those type of things.
And so some states require this to be completed. How does this work? Who does this?
The physician does it in any state that's using this form.
And hopefully with a conversation with you, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then what happens to this form?
It's kept on the patient's chart. This is used more at home than in a hospital setting.
Uh-huh.
It's kept on the patient's chart, and the patient would have a DNR document placed on their front door if they were on hospice.
Now, in New York, do we have that in place? Do we have that? Is that something that you see used a lot? Or in New Jersey, do you see it used a lot?
They're used in home care, but I think that, when I say home care, I mean home hospice care and home palliative care. Hospitals are beginning to change over, but before they can change over, they need to educate their staff, and then it becomes an issue of changing all kinds of institutional structure, like the software and the forms, and just it's complicated, but with a dedicated staff and a dedicated belief in it, it can be done.
So at what point should patients and family members be talking with health professionals about whether to sign, whether they want to do not resuscitate? Is that something that you recommend people do as part of advanced planning or the advanced directives that hopefully our listeners have completed or are getting completed, that designates who your healthcare decision maker is going to be if you don't have capacity to make decisions for yourself, and also some of your preferences? And I know that saying that you're going to agree to do not resuscitate is, when you're healthy, is not something that you want to agree to, unless, as you said, there is this likelihood that you will not be able to regain a quality life and independent functioning.
I think there's a couple of steps to this. I think that people need to be educated about CPR itself, and there's a particular website that I like. I'm trying to find it here.
This is on CPR and DNR?
Yeah, actually, it's a decision aid about CPR.
Oh.
It's, Well, I'm going to have to pause for a minute on that one because I can't locate it right now.
So I'll get that from you, and we will put that in the blog that I'll post about this program and a link to that.
So, okay, that's good.
So listeners will be able to find it by going to healthmediapolicy.com and looking for the interview that will take place, the Health Cetera program, on April 6th of 2017. And so there are aids to help people to make decisions about whether to be resuscitated. But your own experience suggests that maybe if a family member is approached with signing a DNR, a do not resuscitate order for a patient, that and one of their loved ones, that that they do this mental conversion to what that means to them, that it really is allowing a natural death?
That would be nice. It would be, I personally could say that that was helpful for me.
And what happens if I sign allow a natural death? Does that mean that all they're going to do is leave my loved one in the bed to just die?
No, the intention is to provide a comfortable and natural death. You know, we live in a time of a lot of technology, and this technology says that we can do anything to fix any situation, but in fact, that's not true. When we look at people who receive CPR in the hospital, 18 out of 100 people survive if they're healthy to begin with, 10 out of 100 if they've got chronic illness, and then 6 out of 100 if they're an older patient with chronic disease, and quality of life is also impacted. Additionally, people have a misconception because of the portrayal in the media of CPR.
Oh, in what way?
It's clean, no ribs get broken, the discomfort of the person who's undergoing the CPR is not shown.
And when somebody is terminally ill to begin with, it's almost, my feeling is it constitutes actually battery and abuse, or it can. And in fact, I sometimes, Dawn, I have wondered how do we get to the place where resuscitation is automatic rather than allow a natural death if in your judgment this person cannot survive. But people should know that the law of the land is that if a healthcare professional does not resuscitate your loved one, and there is no do not resuscitate order, that health professional is held liable. And so I have seen situations where there really should have been a DNR order, that there was no chance of survival for the person. It really did seem like, abuse at the end of life, if you will.
Yeah, having seen it firsthand, it's a very sad and disturbing situation.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, so for our listening audience, if you do not have an advance directive completed, and if you don't have one, go online and just Google advance directive, and you can find a variety of forms that you can complete. April is Healthcare Decision Making Month, and there is a concerted effort to encourage people to have conversations about what are our wishes at the end of life. And this might be one of those points where you're designating somebody who's going to be what's called your healthcare proxy. They're going to make decisions for you if you cannot make your own decisions. And to talk with them about your feelings, about do you want resuscitated no matter what, or if it's highly unlikely that you would have any semblance of a quality life, do you want to be resuscitated? So they're important discussions to have, and to make sure your proxy knows, and also to put in your health in your advance directive. Although, Dawn, I know some lawyers who say don't put more in there than you have to. Have it be the conversation with your healthcare proxy, and have them know your wishes.
Okay, that's one way of looking at it, but I do want to make a suggestion. There is a form to guide conversation for family members. It's called the Five Wishes. And it is a very well-written and well-executed form for individuals to make their wishes known. It can also be used in some states as the legal document. I did find the decision aid that I was referring to earlier. It's if you Google CPR decision aid YouTube, you will find the decision aid, and it will be very informative.
Great. And if you Google five wishes, you'll come up with this form that can help you with essentially completing that advance directive.
Yeah, it's a terrific form.
Great. And any other resources that you want to alert our listeners to?
Those are the two that come to mind most.
Good.
And I'd like to leave it at that, because I think those are good places to start, to be informed about what CPR is, to understand and communicate to your family members via the five wishes, and to keep in mind that what we are doing is allowing natural death and not withholding care from our loved ones.
Well, Dawn Fairley, registered nurse and professor of nursing at the College of Staten Island, thank you so much for coming on to Health Cetera and having this important conversation with us.
You're welcome. I'm happy to have been able to help anyone who this is going to help.
Thank you. And listeners, I hope that you will go to these resources. One is CPR Decision Aid YouTube to guide you through how to make these decisions about the do not resuscitate or allow a natural death. And the five wishes, Google the five wishes, and that can walk you through completing an advanced directive. And remember that if you're approached about do not resuscitate order, reframe it as allow a natural death and have a conversation with the healthcare professionals about, if I allow a natural death, if we go with that, what kind of support will my loved one get? So important issues, and we thank you for listening today on Health Cetera. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy. You can follow us online at healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com. You've been listening to Health Cetera on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and streaming online at WBAI.org. Have a great day.